tiny, tiny fraction of what it is today. And lo and behold, although we were trying to raise $20,000, and I hope to get it within a month, we actually raised closer to $30,000 and got it in just a few weeks. And so that was the first time when I felt really sure this model is going to work. We're going to be able to run this as a charity and get donations from people. After that, Wikipedia continued to grow, and like crazy. I mean, all we could do was scramble to keep buying servers and keep it on the air. The community was very successful. The website was very successful, but the Wikimedia Foundation remained really a fairly non-functional stub, just a way of getting some money to keep the servers on the air. So after a period of time, we get bigger and bigger and bigger. We finally realized, hey, this is actually, we need to build a proper organization, proper infrastructure behind this. Went through a process of search. We found Sue Gardner, who came in. It was a really, it's always a very dangerous point in the history of any organization to get your first actual CEO who's going to come in and run things because, you know, is it the right person? You know, it could be a complete disaster and you have to start all over. We were very lucky. Sue's great. And so Sue has really spearheaded building the Wikimedia Foundation into what it is today, which is still, of course, quite a small organization in the grand scheme of things. When you think about all the numbers that Sue's going to talk about today, all the things that we're doing for hundreds of millions of people around the world with a very tightly run, very small staff. So my great thanks, of course, go to Sue, who helped us all make sure Wikipedia works and stays on the air so we can all get back to typing. And I guess she's going to tell us all about it. Thank you.
It's so funny because Jimmy says that, and I remember when I did come into the Wikimedia Foundation, and he's right, it was in effect a stub. And the risk that Jimmy took in hiring me to run the Wikimedia Foundation was actually very, very low, because if it had broken, it wouldn't have gotten actually any worse. It really did have nowhere to go but up. So it played out nicely for everyone. I'll talk just a little bit, because of who is here today and the purpose of this conference, I'll talk just for a little bit about my own personal background and my connection to your world. So I come from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I was a longtime journalist, and I ran CBC.ca, which was the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the equivalent of the BBC, was their website, which was primarily a news website. Prior to running CBC.ca, I worked at CBC Radio and CBC Television, and I did a little bit of print work. So I come from the world before Wikipedia. And I come from quality journalism. I come from Canada's largest cultural institution. And so I feel a sense that is my history. That is where I come from. So I kind of feel like I straddle two worlds. I'm not a pure product of the Wikipedia, the new world. I have a foot in the old world as well, which makes me feel like I might be able to speak to some of the people here in a language that works for both the old and the new world, if that makes sense. I hope that turns out to be true. So I wanted to start by asking a couple questions just so I can gauge your sort of understanding of Wikipedia, which I think is going to be quite high. Can you put up your hand if you ever have edited Wikipedia? Hi. Okay, that's good. All right. And can you put up your hand if you would consider yourself a wholehearted supporter, someone who endorses Wikipedia and what it stands for and thinks that it's wonderful and transformative in the world? That's good. Okay. Can you put up your hand if you have any reservations at all about Wikipedia, any qualms? It's all the Wikipedians putting up their hands. I love you guys. It's all the Wikipedians. That's hilarious. I'm here to persuade the Wikipedians to support it and endorse it. Okay, so my goal with this presentation, I know that later in the day and also yesterday, I know that you got into lots of nuts and bolts about GLAM institutions and cultural partnerships and so forth. My goal here is to take a step back from that and to talk sort of big picture. And I have two primary purposes. The first is those of you who have reservations about Wikipedia and supporting it, I am going to try to overcome those reservations. I'm going to try to persuade you to love it as much as I have learned to love it. And then my second goal here is I'm going to try to equip you to evangelize on its behalf if you choose to do that. So I'm going to try and give you some arguments and some information to persuade your colleagues, your friends, to edit, to donate, to get involved, to form partnerships and so forth. Okay? And I'm also going to play you some videos of Wikipedians. So it's funny that Jimmy introduced me because I stole this slide from Jimmy's presentations. The ideal encyclopedia should be radical, and it should stop being safe. So that was Charles Van Doren who said that back in 1962. And I think about it a lot because when I joined the Wikimedia Foundation about 3.5 years ago, I initially thought that my role would be primarily to talk to people like you and persuade you to take Wikipedia seriously, to persuade you that it was credible and responsible and reliable. And I think the reason that that was my goal was because I had come from outside of the Wikipedia world, and my perceptions of Wikipedia were very different from what the reality turned out to be. When I joined the organization, I think I expected that Wikipedians were, or would be, radical people who were trying to tear down old systems and call into question old ways of working, and who positioned themselves as oppositional to the cultural institutions such as the CBC that I had worked for. And what I found was quite the opposite. I found that Wikipedians were very, typically, very serious-minded, brilliant, obviously, completely brilliant people, very serious-minded and very very quality-oriented and quality-focused. And so they would ask me questions about PBS, which they loved. They wanted to talk about the BBC, which they also loved. They respected the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the Smithsonian, the cultural institutions. And that was a bit of a surprise to me. Perhaps it shouldn't have been, but it was a bit of a surprise to me. So I felt like my first order of business as the executive director was to talk to folks like you and help you understand that Wikipedians exist in a long tradition of learning and a long tradition of purveying information and making it available to people, and that they were believers in quality. Then the more time that I spent as ED, I began to realize that although that is true and that's an important message, it's also true that Wikipedia is a radical invention. It's a disruptive invention. And we see that when people make efforts to impede people's access to Wikipedia. So I've nuanced my message a little bit, and I'm now talking a little bit more about its radicalism because I think it's important not to lose sight of that. I think what Wikipedia tries to do should not be radical, right? In the world that we would all want to live in, it should not be radical to provide information for people, but it is in our world sometimes somewhat of a radical act. So that is why I start with this slide. And then I go to this slide, because I think this is really important. I had this custom made for me. Wikipedia had never presented this image to anybody, nor had it thought about itself in this way. Can you read the text? Yeah? So Wikipedia is the blue line at the top. This is traffic, right? This is audience numbers. It's unique visitors as measured by Comscore Media Metrics, which is the industry standard for internet audience measurement. So Wikipedia is the blue line at the top, and then you see, lower down, you see the New York Times, CNN, the BBC, Encyclopedia Britannica, the Wall Street Journal, PBS, NPR, and so forth. The reason I show this slide is because I had a conversation shortly after I joined the Wikimedia Foundation with a guy at PBS who was considering commissioning a television program that would somehow, a quiz show related to Wikipedia. And when he and I were talking about whether that was a good idea, did it make sense, was it something that we wanted to do, he told me that he thought one of the motivations for Wikipedia to participate in such a thing with him was that PBS would be able to drive serious traffic to Wikipedia, right? And I thought, you know, it's so funny because we're all only capable of seeing the world from our chair, right, from our vantage point. And so this wasn't the vantage point that he saw the world from. He saw it from the vantage point of PBS is a really important and serious cultural institution in the United States. Now, the reason I wanted to be associated with PBS was because it has enormous credibility and it has a mission that we share with it, and we should want to do good work together. But the reason I was not interested in being associated with PBS was because it could drive traffic to Wikipedia, right? So the reason I show this slide is because if you're in the business of purveying knowledge and purveying information and you want to make it available to the maximum possible number of people, Wikipedia should be your point of dissemination. That's the only purpose of this slide, is to make that visible. So Wikipedia has 17 million articles in 273 languages. I do sometimes say to English audiences that each of those language versions of Wikipedia is a unique cultural product. Some people know that, but some people don't. So the Swedish Wikipedia, the Arabic Wikipedia, the English Wikipedia, they're all completely distinct, right? They're all unique cultural products made by and made for people in that language. And this is a map which shows where Wikipedia is most popular in the world, where it's most used. And obviously that correlates with technology penetration and internet access and so forth. But you can see that in Canada, Wikipedia is most popular in Canada of any country, which pleases me because I am Canadian. In Europe, that's where we're the most popular. And we are popular, and we are the number five most popular website in the entire world, despite spending $0 on advertising and $0 on promotion, which obviously is really rare. I don't think there would be another site in the top 50 that could say the same. And we're free to use. So that's important. Wikipedia is free for anybody to use around the world for any purpose. Jimmy talked about the Wikimedia Foundation. There's 54 employees of the Wikimedia Foundation. We're supported and we work in partnership with a network of international chapters. There are folks here today from Wikimedia UK. Most of those chapters are volunteers as well. There are some paid staff in Germany, but typically the Wikimedia Foundation is really 55 people. There are fewer than 100 people paid worldwide to support Wikipedia. And so how is that possible? So that's possible because of the effects of volunteer editors. So there's about 100,000 active Wikipedia editors around the world. We define active as people who've made more than 5 edits in a given month. I might want to stop just for a second and ask you to put up your hand. I think you're going to be introduced, or you're going to introduce yourselves, or possibly that happened yesterday. But can you put up your hand if you're an active Wikipedia editor? So it's thanks to these people. And I'm happy that you outnumber the paid staff in the room here. That is good. So one of the great things about my job is that I get to travel around the world and talk to Wikipedians in many different countries. There's only really one forum for Wikipedians to come together and meet each other every year, and that's our annual Wikimania conference. I see Wikipedians all the time, so I'm in sort of a unique position. Jimmy is probably the only person who has more exposure to Wikipedians. So one of the things that I like to do is to try and reflect Wikipedians back to themselves, because I think it's important to understand your own story and see yourself reflected and see who you are. So I used to do that verbally. I used to describe, we've done studies, and I used to describe the average Wikipedian's age and you know, what they did for a living and that kind of thing. But in Gdansk, just this past year, for the first time, we brought out a crew and we shot Wikipedians. Have you guys seen these videos? We shot the Wikipedians. It was sad. Have you guys seen these videos? We've just started. They're on YouTube and so forth. I hope you haven't. And even if you've seen them on YouTube, you haven't seen them at this sort of level of volume and so forth. So I'm going to play a couple of videos, which are Wikipedians. You will recognize some of them. I think two of them, at least, are here in this room. Nice. I love seeing those videos. I love it because, I mean, has anybody in this room seen the documentary Truth in Numbers? Yeah, so a couple of people have seen it. So it's a documentary that was made about Wikipedians and about criticisms of Wikipedia and its history, and there's a lot in it about Jimmy. It essentially follows Jimmy around the world while he talks to Wikipedians. And one of the things that I love about that documentary is to see what I think of, like, the charm and the optimism and the hope and the shining intelligence in the faces of Wikipedians. And I think there's something incredibly charming about it, but there's also something just so hopeful about it. These really smart people all over the world, young, smart people coming together to make this thing. So I love watching these videos. I have three more. They're all quite short, but I have three more that I wanted to show you. So those two, so that first video that I showed you was just people saying their usernames, and then that is a video that I use when I'm talking to people about the editors and trying to introduce them. I have two more which are part of what we call our bookshelf project. The purpose of our bookshelf project is to provide materials for people who are considering editing. We want to recruit more editors. We want the whole world to edit Wikipedia. So we have a project called the Bookshelf, which has, you know, tips and cheat sheets and wiki syntax guides and all sorts of materials like that. And the next two videos that I'm going to show you are part of that project. So these are intended to, I think, to sort of just tell people why they should edit and give them a bit of insight into what editing is like.
There's an edit button. Just click on it, find the place where the text is, and edit. And then click save. It's that easy. You're right.
Isn't she cute? She kills me. And I love the woman. I love the, I mean, like I said, the purpose of those was to do outreach, to persuade people to help us. I love the woman who says, and you will find lovers, you know? I think, like, we may be overcommitting a little bit, but, you know, there's hope. It's possible. So those are some of the editors, just a sampling of editors. But they're pretty typical, I think, those folks. So I wanted to talk through some of the smartest things that I think that people have said about Wikipedia. And one of the smartest things I think that people have said is Nicholson Baker. Do you folks know who Nicholson Baker is? He's an American author, a novelist. He wrote Vox, which was, I think, his most popular book, possibly. And he's very active in librarian, in saving card catalogs and so forth, right, in libraries. Nicholson Baker wrote that Wikipedia flourishes because it was a shrine. It is a shrine to altruism, a place for shy, learned people to deposit their trawls. And I just think that's such a lovely notion, right? This idea that there are all these people who know things and who are really, really curious and who want to share their information with other people. And that's why Wikipedia works. Nicholson Baker actually famously became a person who trolled the articles for deletion pages on Wikipedia and tried to rescue stubs that would otherwise have been deleted because he felt sorry for them, which I thought was so charming. Cass Sunstein, Wikipedia works because people who know the truth are usually more numerous and committed than those who believe in a falsehood. And Daniel Pink, Wikipedia represents a belief in the supremacy of reason and goodness of others. And sometimes I tell a story here that Jimmy used to tell that I really like, which is when Jimmy first started Wikipedia, nobody believed that it would work, right? He didn't believe that it would work. It was an experiment. But nobody believed that it would become the success that it has become. And there's actually a famous Wikipedia quote about that, which is, I can't remember the name of the editor, but someone who said, Wikipedia cannot work in theory, it can only work in practice. Who is it? No, we traced it back earlier. Someone said it in 2004, and it's been repeated many, many times by other people. So Jimmy said that when he used to start talking about Wikipedia, when he was first sort of floating the notion of doing that project, people would just tell him outright, it can't possibly succeed. There's no way that this could work. How could this possibly work? And over time, he began to make an analogy to the restaurant industry. So if you imagine that there was no such thing as a restaurant industry, right, and you proposed, I think I'm going to start something that I will call a restaurant. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite people into a building, and I'm going to cook and serve food to them, and they're going to pay me to come and sit and eat my food. People would have said, you know, that's not possible. Like, that couldn't possibly work, right? If you did that, you would have knives, and you would have kitchen implements, and you would have hot soup and hot drinks, and there will be fighting, and the police will be called every night, and people will stab each other with steak knives, right? Obviously, that doesn't happen, and the same is true with Wikipedia. And what we find from that is that we can learn that people typically want to help, right? There are always going to be people who want to vandalize, they want to cause problems, but those people are outnumbered by people who want to help each other. Wikipedia's validation of that as our restaurants. So I added this quote for this audience because I think it's important. If Wikipedia is becoming the family encyclopedia for the 21st century, historians, cultural institutions, people like you, have a professional obligation to make it as good as possible. I talked to the first Wikipedia Academy that I ever talked to was in Berlin in, I think, 2008. And it was a group of mathematicians. And I asked a guy randomly in the corridor why he had turned up. He was a mathematics professor. And he told me that he felt like his role, his job, was not narrowly focused on teaching mathematics to the kids in his class according to the curriculum prescribed by his institution. He felt like his job was to make sure that people understood mathematics or to try to help people understand mathematics in general. And so he said that given that German kids, German people, were going to Wikipedia to get that information, he felt that he was honor-bound, he had a moral obligation to want to make sure that the information on Wikipedia was as good and rich and complete as possible. So, how can you help? And I think the whole conference really is about how you can help, so I will just restrict myself to skating over at a very surface level. A couple quick things. So, my fundraising team would kill me if I didn't mention that you could donate. We're running our annual campaign this year. It's going really well. Everything is fantastic. But we are a nonprofit, so we do rely on people's voluntary contributions to keep Wikipedia going. You can write articles, and I would say specifically, too, you can encourage your friends to try editing Wikipedia. I particularly have an interest in encouraging more women to edit. 87% of Wikipedia editors are male. I think there are a lot of cultural factors contributing to that. I think we can and we should do a lot to broaden out the gender diversity on Wikipedia. I think to me, coming from a media background, to me, it's a content argument, right? The encyclopedia is only going to be as rich and broad and diverse and comprehensive and deep and smart as the breadth of the people who contribute to it, right? So I always like to make a small plea specifically to the women in the audience. Please do edit if you don't already, because we need you. Any topic that is interesting to you will be helpful to us. You can stage content improvement activities and contests, and I know that a number of the people in this room have done that and probably know more about it than I do. You can, if you're a professor, assign your students to write articles as coursework or use Wikipedia to teach media literacy. They've had particular success using Wikipedia to teach media literacy in Germany, which is where I think it was first done. And I think the reason it works is because Wikipedia provides all kinds of indicators. It's quite modest, right? So it will provide all kinds of disclaimers and indicators to label the quality of particular articles. And it's not defensive about its own quality. So it's a good place, I think, for students to learn markers of quality, markers of credibility. And we're increasingly seeing professors assign their classes to write articles. We have a project in the United States called the Public Policy Initiative, which is all about that, working with, I think, 14 American universities, where professors are assigning their students to write articles on public policy-related topics. It works really, really well. The reason it works is because students are the natural lifeblood, they're the natural engine of Wikipedia, because they're engaged in the world of ideas, they're thinking, they're reading, they're summarizing and reflecting back information to their professors. That's what they do. So what Wikipedia offers them that they don't get from their coursework normally is an audience for what they're doing, right? So, you know, writing an essay for your professor has some rewards, right? But writing an essay for millions of people to read has an additional level of interest. It's additionally motivating. And what the professors tell us is that when they assign Wikipedia as coursework, often their kids get other benefits out of it that maybe wouldn't have been expected. So they learn, you know, some project management skills. They learn some citation skills, some logical thinking skills, and so forth. So everybody benefits from it. The professors that themselves, I think, find it quite interesting. And then the last thing, and also germane to this audience, is you can release your material under a free license so that more people can use it. So if it goes into Wikimedia Commons, it gets used in our projects and in other projects. CC BY SA is increasingly the license of sharing, right? And increasingly, people are finding that if they release their stuff under that license, it's interoperable. It can be used in lots of different projects more and more. So that was my last slide. And Liam, I don't know if we have time for questions or if you've built that in. We do. Lovely. Okay. And Liam, you might want to help me answer questions. You could be there. Yeah, perfect.
Stand out in the middle, all exposed. Questions?
Right
at the back.
Hi there, Alistair Dunning speaking. Up here at the back.
From
One of the things I found slightly worrying, which I hadn't thought about before, was the different ages of Wikipedians. In that video, everyone seemed to be under the age of 40.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think one of the people in the video is New York Times reporter Noam Cohen, and he might be 40. Would he be 40?
he's not. He's closer to 40 than the average of the videos.
Yeah. No, it's true. The average Wikipedia editor is 25 years old. And lots of Wikipedia editors, obviously, are teenagers and even younger. They tend to take different roles depending on the age that they are. There are some editors who, obviously, they range across all ages, right? There are some editors who are retired because I think retired people have more time to contribute, right? So the New York chapter, for some reason, has an overrepresentation of older editors relative to the others. But that's a pretty typical mix, I think.
And are you trying to change that then? Because, you know, surely you want as many people contributing and the wisdom of the old, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there's a couple of factors playing into that, right? I think Wikipedia has been around not quite 10 years, right? So we haven't yet figured out what the life cycle of a Wikipedian looks like. But my expectation is...
Until they get shot.
Yeah. But my expectation is that you edit when you're in graduate school, right? I think that we've seen signs that when people move into their career and they get married and they start having children, some of them fall away from Wikipedia because they're more focused on their career. They have much less time and so forth, right? So that might be a natural thing, is that there's a bit of a trough in your 30s and your 40s. And then what I would expect is that later in life, people will come back to Wikipedia, like going forward, right? Later in life, people will come back to Wikipedia as they have more time and when they get retired. And like I said, we do have people self-identifying as wanting to start edit now as they retire. But I think that we've done some outreach to older people. And when I say older, I'm saying sort of 65 plus. And what we find is that a large proportion of them just are insufficiently, what I would characterize as insufficiently technology-centric, right, to edit now. And I think that that will change. That will change for two reasons. One is because we're actively engaged in trying to make the editing interface easier to use. We are not pleased that it is as hard to use as it is, right? It's a bad thing. It's a flaw. So we're making it easier to use. But the other thing is that as time goes on, like my mother might never edit, right? But when I'm 70, I probably will continue to edit, you know? So I think over time, Wikipedia editing demographics age will broaden out.
I think one of the discussions we decided yesterday to work on in the unconference session today is about countering systemic bias, most specifically gender ratio, but also age ratio as well, so, and different ethnic groups.
Yeah, but and just to be clear, if I didn't say this, obviously, like I think everyone should edit Wikipedia. It's only going to be as complete as the people who contribute to it.
John.
Okay, this isn't actually a question, but it's a comment on that. I very much agree with what you say, and one of the interesting things I thought at the British Museum behind the scenes is that that actually, compared to the London meetups, which are quite well attended. But the British Museum behind the scenes brought out of the woodwork a much older demographic. There were several people.
And younger. People brought their kids.
There were kids, yeah. And there were a lot of people in their 20s. But there were several middle-aged people and retired people and so on. And you don't, you know, they're not going to go to Wikimania. They're not actually going to go to the London meetup in great numbers. And it's also true... I think that the most active editors and the people who do feature content are significantly older than the average. If you go to the featured article candidates, that sort of thing, you're actually very largely talking to a middle-aged audience and some old people.
I think that's true, yeah.
Any question? Is that a question there? I have while you're going up the back, I don't think everyone should edit Wikipedia.
You what?
I don't think everyone should edit Wikipedia.
Oh. So go on.
I would like to contest the suggestion that everyone should edit Wikipedia in the same way as I don't think everyone should be a university professor or everyone should be a journalist. I think everyone should be involved in the Wikimedia movement or free culture, but I don't think I'm a terrible Wikipedia editor.
I don't believe that, is that true?
I don't edit Wikipedia. I find it too hard. but the nature of the actual project of Wikipedia is quite a specific beast, as opposed to free culture and making available information free for anyone in their own language and so forth, which is a much broader enterprise and can be completely much more multifaceted in the ways that you can interrelate with that.
I think I would accept your nuance, which is like everyone should be involved in the projects. Like, ideologically, I like to imagine a world where everyone could edit Wikipedia. And honestly, if I were sort of trying to draw the line between people who should edit and people who shouldn't edit, you would want to draw it on the basis of seriousness of intent, right, and sort of scholarly orientation and all of those sorts of things. But I think it's also true, you know, that there's lots of roles for people, like the wiki gnome kind of roles, right, where they're contributing, they're making like a serious, helpful contribution, like the folks who gave me a cloak on IRC or whatever, right? I mean, they're making a real contribution. They're not editing the editorial materials yet, although they might later.
There was a question up back there.
Hi.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Fiona/Panid. I am a female editor.
Yay.
Hi.
Thank you.
two who are here.
I was actually very interested in the blog post that you put up the other day about how to introduce more women, but I did find it slightly worrying saying things like having women-only events, because to me that would serve to make us more of an other on the project than we already are. Yeah. So my question was, what from that blog post or what ideas do you have to encourage more women that also make us an inclusive part of the community?
Yeah. No, that's a fantastic question, right? And that blog post that I made was dipping my toe very, very gingerly into the waters of talking about gender on Wikipedia, right? Because I want to be really, really careful, because it's a holy war for lots of people, gender on the internet, gender on Wikipedia, gender in online community. And I don't particularly want to just fall accidentally into a camp. You know what I mean? I want to be really careful about how I approach it. But I would say that you need all sorts of measures. You need all sorts of things to help, right? There are women involved in Wikipedia. And one of the things that I worry about when I talk about gender in Wikipedia is I worry about creating this impression that there are no women there, right? And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you don't want to make the women who are there feel even more unusual and marked out and like they have to represent their gender, right? So I'm wanting to be conscious of the women who are involved and not trying to pigeonhole or create some kind of reality or some kind of perception of reality around them. But I do think that what the research shows us, and the book that I cited, Unlocking the Clubhouse, which is just a great book, and what it shows us is that not all women, but some women benefit from having other women around them, right? So everybody's different, everybody has different motivations, everybody has different needs and so forth. And I think the kind of women who would edit Wikipedia without a particular outreach towards them, they are editing, right? So people like Kat Walsh or Phoebe Ayers, there's lots of them, right? They are already there. I think that the people who aren't editing Wikipedia today, whether they be male or female, need different motivations to be appealed to, right? So when I made my first edit, I edited because there was a little text sentence at the top of the page that said, what did it say? Wikipedia needs your help. Is that what it said? It's like, it comes and goes. It's sometimes still there. Does anyone know? Yeah, so I saw that, and because
we don't need their help anymore.
Yeah, we don't need your help. But I saw that little link, and I, because for whatever reason, Canadian public service-oriented parents, female, like whatever the reason is, I'm the kind of person who responds to requests for help, right? So that was why I edited. And then I think at some point after I'd made a couple of edits, somebody thanked me, and I responded even more to that, right? It's like, oh, okay, if I'm wanted and I'm being helpful, right? And one of the things that Unlocking the Clubhouse says is that women are more, what is the phrasing? I can't remember. They're more easily dissuaded because social hurts hurt them more, right? And I know that. Like, I edited Extraordinary Rendition, and I got my edit reverted, and I took it very seriously, and I felt very rejected by Wikipedia, right? Yeah, and I think there's
the negative reaction from the community issue of my first edit was reverted, yeah. I don't think that's a women issue.
Exactly,
that's a human
right.
issue.
That's true. Right, but what we find, and again going back to unlocking the clubhouse, what we find is that women suffer those hurts more acutely, right? So those, that is one of the reasons cited by lots of people who abandon editing is exactly that. And we may find it's disproportionately, you know, women are overrepresented in the people who cite that as one of the reasons for leaving, right? So I think that if there are people, women and other people, who need a more receptive environment, a more welcoming environment, a more inclusive environment. Because remember, like, we want them to edit. They don't have to edit. Nobody's making them, right? The least that we can do is create those kinds of spaces for them by starting mentoring programs, doing various kinds of outreach. We're seeing with the Public Policy Initiative, we've developed a new role called the Campus Ambassador, which is folks who do face-to-face mentoring of new Wikipedians on university campuses. Women make up more than 50% of the campus ambassadors, right? So we may find, and what I think will happen is, I think that as we start doing outreach, we've never done, the movement has never officially placed, you know, a strategic importance on outreach in the past. Things develop very naturally, right? I think as we start placing more emphasis on outreach in general, I think we'll find a natural diversification and a natural broadening. More women, more older people, more people from the global south and so forth, just by virtue of reaching out and using different mechanisms and using different tools. I think we'll find people responding to them who are different from the people who sort of self-selected.
You know? There was a survey done by University of United Nations, UNU. An informal opt-in census of Wikimedians, and one of the things in that was letters out to editor accounts that hadn't edited for a long time saying, why did you leave? And the most popular response, do you remember?
It was, I didn't leave, right? It was, I paused, but I'm not gone.
And a bunch of those started again because they noticed or they felt needed, and it was, they were surprised that someone had noticed that they had gone.
Yeah.
And so it went, ooh, I'll come back now.
Yeah, and so just the act of surveying, right, will help us retain people.
Could we?
Oh, am I logged out? Here, I'll do it.
Another question?
Yeah.
Kenny Cruz, our keynote from last night.
Good morning. I'm one of those that certainly believes in the virtues of diversity for all kinds of reasons, all of its subtle, profound kinds of consequences. But I would like to hear some thoughts about the importance of pushing for diversity in terms of the virtues of the end product. It's an encyclopedia we're producing.
Yeah.
And so by what I really mean by that is, and maybe you or maybe others in the audience have some thoughts. And I'm a newcomer. It's the first time I've been in the room with so many Wikipedians. It's my inner editor is all a jitter, and so you know I'd like to hear about what is it that substantively we're perceiving is missing from Wikipedia that greater diversity could help remedy.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to take a first crack at that, and then I too would be delighted to hear from other people. I mean, to me, it's really straightforward, right? I used to work in newsrooms, and newsrooms are not typically very, very diverse. At the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, they were very gender balanced, but in other ways, politics, social class, geographically, obviously, right? They're pretty homogenous cultures. And so you could see in the product, right, assumptions were made about what was interesting to people. Assumptions were made about what people already knew and what they didn't yet know, right? So what we would try to do in the news industry, obviously, was to broaden ourselves out as much as we reasonably could. I mean, given that we were writing for a particular audience, but we'd try to broaden ourselves out to make the end product as rich as it could be. And I see all kinds of evidence of systemic bias on Wikipedia itself, right? The most obvious or recent example for me was I'm a fan of the writer Pat Barker, the British Booker winning novelist, right? I love her stuff. For whatever reason, I was on Wikipedia 6 or 8 months ago, and I found that the article about Pat Barker was just a stub. It was a few sentences, and I was astonished. And I don't know why that is. You could attribute that to a lack of gender diversity, or who knows, right? There's probably lots of different factors that could play into that. But I took it as an opportunity to flesh out that article. recently I was wandering around and I found that there was no article about feminism in Sweden, which surprised me because there were articles about feminism in Canada and the United States and I think also in the UK. So I think, you know, gender is easy because it's obvious, right? But what it tells us is that that in every way you want your culture that's contributing to be as diverse as possible, because there are lots of areas where it's not as obvious, right? But you're still hurting, you're still lacking from not having those perspectives or those experiences or those information, that information. I mean, Wikipedia is remarkably diverse in many ways, right? There are editors from every country. Right, there are editors from a huge, wide range of political persuasions. I think there's a pretty good class range, or at least more so than in a typical newsroom or editorial type of environment. Right, so there's lots of diversity in lots of ways, but we're also still, I think, showing lots of evidence of systemic bias.
And the particular systemic bias that I'm particularly interested in, why we run GlamWiki conferences and so forth, is what you might call high culture. A lack of depth in that relative to what you might call popular culture, because in my estimation at least, there is an industry, a space in society that's government funded for the preservation of what the society believes to be important in physical museums and libraries and archives and so forth, and they're the obvious things they're the important things that a society has deemed necessary to spend taxpayer money on preserving and writing about. And so the people, new media, Wikipedia, the internet, as an example of that, are always colonized by those who, first, by those who feel left out of the existing media. And so Wikipedia articles are most fleshed out and most detailed in areas in which there is no official representation in formal culture, mm-hmm. and so Pokemon is very well established. But those people who particularly care about the things that society deems to be important enough to preserve in museums, those people are already in museums, and that knowledge has already been created by museum curators. And so the question is not so much about getting those people interested in sharing and getting those people interested in producing knowledge, which they're doing in museums. It's about opening up the digital display cases in a different kind of collaboration with free culture rather than merely editing because they happen to know something, because that work has already been done. Mm-hmm. Sorry to hijack your question session. question?
Hi, Dominic Oldman, I'm British Museum. I'm not a Wikipedia editor either, and this is a related question. Yes. Yet.
Thank you.
But I am involved in putting out free information and data and knowledge onto the internet. And I guess it's another question about diversity, is where does that fit in? Should I be putting less effort into what I'm doing at the moment and transferring that to Wikipedia? Where do other projects fit in with Wikipedia? And would it be bad if I actually swapped that effort that I was putting into other areas, other diverse areas, and putting it into Wikipedia?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, why don't... Do you want to answer it?
I would say the thing with free licensing and free culture is that's in a strict definition of free, rather than merely no cost to access, but no restriction on reuse. And so, like I said in my video, on my interview in the video, the thing about Wikimedia as opposed to Wikipedia, the website, is that our mission is free knowledge available to those in their own language. And if that happens on Wikipedia, fantastic. If that happens by clay tablets on pigeons, fantastic. It's just that we found the most efficient way of sharing free knowledge is via a wiki encyclopedia website. Because of the virtue of free licensing and the share-alike licensing, effort put into sharing knowledge in different fora that aren't necessarily managed by the Wikimedia Foundation is not lost to free culture, because it's all about interoperability. And there are many other kinds of knowledge that encyclopedia doesn't collect. Local history, for example, isn't notable or doesn't warrant inclusion in a global encyclopedia, but it's nevertheless important. The who used to live down my street, what's the story of my town and the families that came through this town. That's important, but it's completely out of scope for Wikimedia projects at the moment, at least, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it depends on what your goals are, right, and what your work is, you know, because there's a network of like-minded or aligned organizations and projects and institutions. So it depends on what your contribution is to them, right? So, you know, there are engineers working on OpenStreetMaps. There are scientists working on the Encyclopedia of Life. I think it depends on where your best contribution is. I know that when I got involved with the Wikimedia Foundation, the reason I got involved was because I believed in the work that it was doing. I believed that the work that it was doing was important. And I liked that it was... I liked that it was having a huge impact, right? It mattered to me. Personally, it mattered to me to be part of something that was big and affecting lots and lots of real people. And that's not, honestly, not to marginalize or to say that the other contributions of small things aren't important, because they are. It's a different kind of importance, right? So different people are motivated by different things. I was motivated by wanting to be part of something that was big, which says something about me, I'm sure, but yeah. Yeah, for sure, right? Because, I mean, well, that's what I mean, right? Like, so if you were involved with something like OpenStreetMaps, it's small, you could make a huge impact, right? You could actually take a tiny thing and make it immeasurably better. You know, your own contribution can be more significant, right? And on Wikipedia, I mean, there's no role right now, no sort of special role for somebody with a lot of expertise in a particular topic area, right? That's one of the things that we're looking at. Can we craft ways, easy ways, on a, you know, scalably, for subject matter experts to have some influence proportionate to their knowledge, right? We've experimented, for example, with having, like at the Wikipedia Academy in Berlin that I was at, they had a mathematician review Wikipedia's coverage of math and give feedback to editors so that they could then improve that material, right? So projects like that, you know, it might be, like if I were a subject matter expert, I might not want to engage as a Wikipedia editor. I might, though, in a year or two when there are roles defined for me so that I can have an impact commensurate with my, you know, knowledge.
Can I just get Matthew to reply to that briefly from the perspective of the British Museum and stuff that we've done here?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly kind of what happened here when we had the backstage pass and when Liam's time hit. And that was the most effective use of curators. It wasn't getting curators to edit directly. Their contribution was reviewing and reviewing and feeding back to the editors. And I think when you said earlier about, you know, it's experts, you know, it wasn't you who said it, it was the quote you put up about that it was their job to, you know, to make Wikipedia better. They don't have to do it as editors, they have to do it by engaging with editors, and I think that's a successful model. But I can see, I mean, I'm not a... I can see that it's quite dangerous trying to formalize that. Dangerous. Say, right, well, this expert has some kind of right over these articles. You know, I think, but you probably know that better than me.
But that's and that's why I said earlier about Wikipedians being open to expertise, right? Because again, it was a surprise to me when I started. But when I saw, for example, the Wikipedians in Berlin, and this guy gave them, I think, three really useful pieces of feedback that they could then take away, and they did afterwards. They took it away and they improved the articles on the basis of what he was able to say. They couldn't have said it, right, because they didn't have the subject matter expertise, they didn't have the breadth, right? But when someone with that expertise was going to say to them, here are the three ways you can make those articles significantly better, they were willing to run with it, which was great.
Question sitting behind you.
Hi, I'm David Harris with the Global Lives Project. I have actually two questions for you, and they're kind of related. The first one is, how do you decide what to have your paid employees do? right? Like, I assume they're not writing articles, right? That's the joke. But how do you decide what they do? And then the second question is, have you seen any other organizations, specifically cultural institutions, take the model that Wikimedia Foundation, Wikipedia has pioneered and use it successfully? And if you can think of any other examples, I'd love to
hear
about
them.
Sure,
what you mean by the model? Mass volunteer or website or?
Mass volunteer and the combination of the mass volunteer with some sort of nonprofit infrastructure to meet the goals of a cultural institution or perhaps replace a previous type of cultural institution such as the encyclopedia or supersede.
Okay, so I'll take a crack at the first question, and then I might let Liam take a crack at the second question. You'll have time to think, because he's more the expert in the cultural institutions. But the first question is, it's a work in progress, right? So the question was, how do we decide what the staff do? And it's a work in progress. I mean, it's such a delicate, emergent balance, right? Because the last thing that we want to do, the staff of the Wikimedia Foundation, is demotivate and eat the lunch of volunteers, right? The worst thing that we could possibly do would be to, duplicate what Liam does and thereby disincentivize people from doing it themselves and, inject money in where money is not needed and all of that sort of stuff. It works today, right? So we don't want to break things that are working. On the other hand, there are some obvious things that the staff need to do that you need staff to do, right? So, the staff do the legal protection of the projects, right? You need a lawyer, you need someone on call. If you get the call at 2 a.m, you need someone who's paid to be there and take the phone call and so forth. So legal protection is an obvious thing. We do the fundraising, we do the administrative support, we do the registration of the domain names and the protection of the trademarks and all that sort of stuff. We pay the bandwidth bill and we buy and install the servers. The technical work is supplemented with lots and lots of volunteer activity as well, probably more so on the development front than on the operations front. But you need a certain amount of paid staff just to make sure that operationally, from a technical perspective, you're robust and you're in good shape, right? And that's always been the case for the Wikimedia Foundation. The first hire was Brian Vibber, was a technical hire. So that stuff is obvious, right? And then more tenuously and with less certainty, we're beginning to experiment with working directly with the community, right? With the editorial community. And that's trickier because the closer you get to the editors, the more you run the risk of demotivating them and paying for things that used to be done for free. So it's an interesting challenge from a managerial perspective because your temptation, which you need to resist, your temptation is to stay away from the editorial work, right, so as not to mess with it. But in actual fact, you can't stay away from the editorial work because it's the whole point, right? So you need to engage, however confusing it might be or difficult or fraught, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes, you still need to engage with the editorial work because otherwise you're really, what is the point, right? Like if you're not working on the main product, what are you actually doing, right? So we hired recently a guy named Zach Exley who came to us. He used to work at MoveOn.org and he was involved in the beginning of his career as a labor organizer, right? So what he's done is he's worked with people in voluntary movements to run campaigns to help support them in meeting their needs, in accomplishing their goals, right? So we're going to try and borrow techniques from, for example, the labor movement and from organizations like MoveOn and see how we can use them. But it's very tricky, it's very fraught. There's a lot of, I think it's fair to say, there's a lot of anxiety inside the Wikimedia movement. Look, Liam's laughing. There's a lot of anxiety inside the Wikimedia movement about how that happens, right? And what's the smart way to do it? We know that we will never pay for content, we will never pay for editorial work, right? And I did a back of the envelope calculation that suggested that if we did have to pay for editorial work, it would be hundreds of millions of dollars a year, right? So clearly the strength of the business model is that we're not paying people to write the encyclopedia. But we also aspire to remain very much a volunteer-centric movement. And what that means is we will never have, like Google or Facebook, we will never have a staff of tens of thousands of people. We want to keep the staff very, very small relative to the proportion of volunteers. So that means we want to make smart choices about what we're doing, and we want to learn really quickly about how to do it well. But it's a great question, and I could actually talk about it far beyond anyone in this room's interest in it, because it's what I think about all the time. It's really interesting. And so the last thing I would say before I throw to Liam, because I haven't forgotten the second question, but the last thing that I would say is you know, what we're doing is emergent, right? Nobody, I don't think anybody has done it. We've looked to all kinds of organizations for models, right? And, you know, Greenpeace, the Red Cross, there are lots of mission-driven organizations that work with large numbers of volunteers and are very dependent on them. But I think we're unique, I really do, because the volunteers are the heart and the soul of what is happening at Wikipedia, right? And the Wikimedia Foundation and the Wikimedia chapters are, I would say, an essential support, but they are a support, and I think that that's unique.
One of the things you just said was how the Wikimedia Foundation staff intends to always be small relative to the community, and and this is quite clearly true given the slides we've just seen of 54 staff and 100,000 active editors. And active is a definition that you can change what it means, but that's a fairly huge difference. However, it's all relative to the norm. Last year there were how many staff?
25.
And the year before that?
8.
And the year before
like
that?
7.
So the rate of growth from the perspective of the community, who feels more or less the same, to the foundation is at the one time of rapid growth and scary growth. Sometimes some are very worried that the foundation is far too big for its boots, has far too many staff, and why do we need staff anyway? And on the other hand, in the same breath, there is, here are all these things that need to be done, and why isn't the foundation doing them faster? And these are two quite valid criticisms that are completely contradictory and are held by most everyone at the same time, which is interesting. And as you say, yes, it's just a little bit fraught, that whole thing. With regards to your second question of has anyone done this before, has anyone taken this model, the concept of the mass volunteer generated thing is not at all new. The Red Cross, Greenpeace, Amnesty, mm-hmm. Oxfam, any kind of go and volunteer in poor country to build wells, and it's the same kind of. Sorry?
OED, Oxford English Dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That, obviously, the Oxford English Dictionary famously was founded on the basis of, here's an editorial staff based in a shack at the side of one of the colleges in Oxford University. That was extremely cold, and they would ask readers around the world of the English language with a little slip of paper that was stuck inside the cover page of every single book printed for a couple of years around the world, in the English-speaking world, to submit words and page references under a standard formation of half a piece of paper torn sideways, the lemma, definition, page reference, quote in which it was used, and so forth. And when this was proposed to the Royal Philological Society of the UK as the, this is how we will do the official history of the English language, the society said, you couldn't possibly ask the public, they'll submit wrong words. And that's it's almost exactly analogous to the way, and thank you for reminding me, to the way that Wikipedia works in the 21st century. Does that actually answer your question, or did I just come up with a cute
I was
little?
More about since Wikipedia began.
OpenStreetMap, I would suggest, is the best example of that. It's Google Maps version of Wikipedia.
Or LibreOffice, right? LibreOffice. They're just forming a nonprofit to run what formerly known as OpenOffice. They're just forming an office to, or sorry, a nonprofit to run that.
The we're from originally, I suppose, the free software movement, working in education, as opposed to being merely free license software. That's quite a different kind of thing. So it's a social movement, not a social network. It's a socially constructed educational tool, which makes it fundamentally different from other user-generated content websites like Facebook or YouTube or Flickr, where that's merely whole bunches of individuals uploading stuff, generating content. I would suggest that we're community-curated work instead. There was a question.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Bastien?
Yeah, okay. I'm Bastien from Wikimedia France, and I have one reaction about radicality and one question about diversity, and the reaction drives to the question, because I had the same feeling that you had and about the surprise. I expected an environment of people being very radical. But that's maybe because I'm coming from a free software background, mm-hmm. where it's different. So my question is about diversity, because now that you're so big, there is some kind of inside diversity of the community and outside diversity of the actors you are speaking to, the Wikimedia Foundation is speaking to, but the free culture movement is larger than just Wikimedia. There is OpenStreetMap, all the others, the free software movement, etc. Do you think that how would you describe the role of the Wikimedia Foundation is diversity, and do you think the money you raise will change this role?
It's such an interesting question, and again, I will try to restrain myself because I could talk about it forever, really. But yeah, I look at all the different players involved in the Wikimedia movement, and I'm interested to see them sharpen up their own sense of themselves and how they fit in, right? So everybody is crafting, all the different players are crafting unique roles relative to, because of the work that they end up doing, right? So what I've seen shake out over time, and Liam, I'd like to hear what you think too. What I have seen shake out is individual Wikimedians run the gamut, right? They represent all viewpoints. They're very, very broad. I'm talking ideologically, right? In terms of radicalism to conservatism. So I think that individual Wikimedians will remain or will continue to sort of house the most radical elements of the community by definition, because they're individuals, right? I've seen the chapters take on roles because the chapters are on the front lines of talking to, for example, cultural institutions, right? I see the chapters much more influenced by and influencing of outside groups because the chapters deal with institutions, right? And so their roles, I think, are in some ways buffering between external institutions and then the internal Wikimedia movement, right? So they're sort of the frontline people. And the Wikimedia Foundation has a role that's somewhere in the middle, which I find really interesting, right? At the end of the day, the Wikimedia Foundation has to stand for certain values and it needs to be uncompromising, right? So for example, with China, we aren't going to compromise with China the way that Google experimented with doing. We just can't. So at the end of the day, we need to be really quite strict and quite firm and quite understanding of where our values begin and end, what they are, how to interpret them in the world, and so forth, right? So I actually think that the whole ecosystem of players inside the Wikimedia movement is self-correcting and not self-reinforcing, mutually helping to understand each other, right? Information passes through. I think it's all useful and it's all good. I think people correctly play different but complementary roles, right? But I'm very interested to see how they play out because I think people are sharpening up their understanding of what their job is inside the movement. Do you want to add anything to that, Liam?
Just briefly, that I find it instructive that currently there is an ongoing discussion with the first. There was an organigram drawn up recently of various movement roles defined against each other, and this reports to that or is supported by this and so forth. And there's an elaborate discussion going on of the layout of that map. Should it be a pyramid? It should be an inverse pyramid. Should it be hub and spoke? Should it be three areas that refer to each other? And merely that discussion, of course, affects the practicality of the community and the work, not one iota, but it's instructive for the community and the various parties involved to be talking about trying to visualize the way they relate to each other, because no one really knows. And it's quite confusing and complicated and obscure, but interesting to see that we're actually trying to work that out. There was one final question here.
Yes. Okay, Dario Taraborelli with the University of Surrey and soon with the Wikimedia Foundation.
Yay.
So I'd like to follow up on one of the questions before about the issue whether to contribute to Wikimedia projects or smaller projects in the open knowledge ecosystem. I don't want to give a shameless plug in favor of Wikimedia. I think there are three key reasons why people should contribute to Wikimedia projects when they can. Obviously, the local history example is a very good example. Wikimedia currently isn't covering local history, so obviously that's not an option. But in many cases in which you have an option to contribute to Wikimedia projects or other projects, I think there are three reasons why you should opt for Wikimedia. The first one is visibility. So that goes back to Sue's argument. Even when you create a stub, so like a page with one paragraph, it immediately goes to the top results in search engines. So basically, your contribution is going to have a huge impact on readers, as opposed to content is much, much harder to find. The second key issue is redundancy. You don't want to duplicate effort, and there's so much content out there, there's just a duplicate of what you can find elsewhere. And ideally, you want to put all the information about the topic in the place where people will be most likely to find it. And that's, to me, the second key issue why Wikimedia is probably the best option in this case. And the third one, which is possibly the most crucial, is maintenance. So there are brilliant projects out there that die after a couple of years because there isn't a critical mass of contributors who are able to make sure that this content will be maintained and updated after a couple of years. And those projects will just disappear if there's no institutional effort to keep them alive. And this is where I think the critical mass of contributors in Wikimedia projects is key to make sure that your effort will just survive. So that's
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Right, I think we have to move on. Thank you very much, Sue.
Thank you, Liam.
I had a book to give you, but I can't find it. It's sitting around somewhere.
Maybe James took it.
So as some of the audience will know, Nina Simon, author of the blog Museum 2, who has generously provided us with a series of her recently published book, The Participatory Museum, which was edited online collaboratively under a Creative Commons license. And so you can download it for free as well as purchase the self-published book.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. We'll just quickly now, before going off to tea, like I said yesterday, one of the worst things you can do is get between a conference delegate and coffee, is talk through the unconference sessions for this afternoon. We used that session yesterday to map out three or four main ideas in which people were interested in talking more about. Joseph, if you'd like to summarize what they are.
From here. Okay, guys. I think that one of the sessions that I'm very keen to make sure happens, I think, especially from the discussion that was earlier on, with regards to equality and appropriate representation of society and systematic bias, I think that's going to be the first of the unconference sessions that are all run parallel.
Show of hands if you're interested in that subject area.
Okay, yeah. so that's one. The other one is copyright and the whole thing that comes with that, but that could go on for days. So, and then there's the technical side of things and metrics and linked data and everything that comes associated with that. Then there's documentation and best practices, both and that works both ways. What best practices with museums working with Wikipedia and previous examples, and also, you know, what should our best practices be when coming to you guys? I think that's a good two-way conversation. Then there was, and I do apologize for those who came from the MCG conference yesterday, but you're going to be doing some speed dating, apparently. Basically, the idea behind that suggestion was one-on-one conversations between a Wikipedian and someone from the museum sector. And then there was another suggestion about how you can work with some of the smaller projects on Wikipedia, on Wikimedia. There are many of them. So if we just run through them, who would like to have a documentation on conference session? And best practices and, okay, three. I don't think that was going to happen. Okay, the equality, systematic bias, and fair representation, hands. Copyright. Technical and metrics. And then also the smaller projects on Wikimedia. One. Okay. Who doesn't like any of the suggestions that we've currently got? Oh, and speed. Who wants the speed dating session as well? Sorry. I think the Wikimedians are going to be very lonely people, I think.
Can I suggest then that the two ones that received the vast majority of the interest, which were systemic bias and tech stuff, use these two main lecture theatres. So systemic bias issues here, and technological linked data, metrics and so forth in the Stevenson Lecture Theatre next door. And then anyone who doesn't want to do either of those in the Sackler Rooms, which can become a de facto speed dating session of those people finding out what they want to talk about because they don't care about these two subjects. Okay, so that'll, okay. That will be at 2:30 this afternoon, immediately following lunch. So we'll go, that's only half an hour, so we'll go straight into that. Recall which one you're interested in going to and where they are. Here will be systemic bias. There will be technological issues. There will be everything else. Have a nice morning tea. The next presentation will be in here in half an hour. Sorry, I lied. A parallel session here and in the Stevenson Lecture Theatre. So.